जय, जगन्नाथ स्वामी की जय, जगन्नाथ पुरी धाम की जय, श्री न्यू द्वारक धाम की जय, श्री श्री रुक्मिणी द्वारकाधीश की जय, जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्र जी की जय, श्री श्री गौरनिताय की जय, गंगमाई जमुनामाय की जय, श्रीमाती तुलसी देवी महारानी की जय, समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ग्लोरियस टू श्री श्री गुरु श्री गौरांग, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री लॉर्ड प्रभुपाद। So today we will be reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 27. And we are very happy that you are all here with us today, participating of our Sunday program, and welcome you very warmly. So this chapter is entitled Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means yoga means union with God, with Krishna. So this Krishna consciousness movement, as you may all know, is intended to reunite us with Krishna. So it is a movement of yoga. So Bhagavad Gita, every chapter is called yoga. There are different yogas, because the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is that we may reunite with Krishna, we may attain yoga. So specifically this chapter is called Karma Yoga. So all the chapters in Sanskrit, they're considered, they have a title related to yoga, to this word yoga. So yoga means union with Krishna, and this chapter speaks on how to reunite with Krishna through karma. And karma has several meanings also, and in this case means activities or actions. How to reunite with Krishna through our actions. Which is very interesting, because usually people think that Eastern religions, like, and that's where we are classified, the Hare Krishnas, Eastern religions are propagating the idea to stop activities. Specifically, this word yoga is very much related to that. That yoga and Eastern thought in general, yoga in particular, are trying to stop all the activities, all our activities, all the activities of the world, and people who are supposed to be yogis, they have to retire, and people think the best place for a yogi is a cave or the mountains or the jungle and like that. So here the concept of Karma Yoga is being presented, which is how to reunite, how to perform yoga through our actions, our activities. So we have chosen a specific text, 27, very famous amongst the devotees and scholars also of Bhagavad Gita, especially the devotees, and especially the devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement. It's text 27. It reads in Sanskrit, Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. I'll repeat. The spirit soul, so for those unfamiliar with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, we are the spirit soul. So that's us, the spirit soul. bewildered by the influence of false ego. So false ego in our philosophy means, well, in every philosophy, ego means identification. One of the meanings. So false ego means the wrong identification. So it says that ourselves, bewildered by the influence of false identification, the false idea of who we are or what we are. So when we are bewildered, again it says there, the spirit soul bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So this chapter is speaking of activities, karma yoga again, and specifically this text is trying to bring us to our senses by explaining to us that, or hinting to us that we may not be doing as much as we may think. Purport. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience or ignorance. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesha, which means the master of the senses of the material body. And he forgets that, for due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness, as we are very much amazed, all of the followers of Srila Prabhupada, we are very much amazed how in every single of his purports, every one of his purports to all these texts in Bhagavad Gita, he puts the whole philosophy, the very deep and profound and great big philosophy of Krishna consciousness, very extensive philosophy of Krishna consciousness, is always put in a nutshell by Srila Prabhupada in every one of these texts. And here specifically, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out one of the greatest defects that we have, and is concerning the false ego. One of our greatest problems is that we are very sure of ourselves, especially in this Western world. It is a general tendency in this world, Eastern or Western, to be materialistic. And when we speak of materialistic or materialism, we mean something much broader, a much larger scope of people or amount of people are encompassed by this word materialistic more than what we may imagine. Actually, for a long time, even after following religious processes, for a long time within that religious process, we may still remain materialistic to a certain extent, because this materialism that is being spoken of in this philosophy is a disease that actually can only overcome when we become totally aloof from this material body and everything that has to do with it. So while we have a material body, and we feel it while we are still very conscious of our material body, then we are participants of this disease, which is materialism, in some way or to some extent. This week marked a very special occasion for the Krishna Consciousness Movement. On September 17th, that was Thursday, we were celebrating 22 years of Srila Prabhupada's coming to America, to the Western world. And it is very significant for us, just as in these in the coming months, especially, we will be commemorating, I mean, all over the world is commemorated the coming of Christopher Columbus to America, discovery of America. So for us, a similar thing happened. The spiritual discovery of America, if we may call it like that, was performed by Srila Prabhupada 22 years ago. And although to this day it has still passed, it is still passing a little unnoticed to a certain extent, still those who follow the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and even some outside of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, some scholars, are seeing it as a very significant event in the life of the whole world. And specifically, we, the followers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we find this event the most important, and we are very confident that as time goes by, and the people, and as this Krishna Consciousness Movement unfolds, 22 years is nothing for a movement, as we can all understand, especially a movement of this nature, a movement that the real effect of this movement is very will be seen when it can get to the heart. Is a movement that has to get to the heart, to the hearts of the people. So therefore, it is not an easy task. It is not an easy journey to get to the all the way to the heart of someone, especially to the heart of the whole world. So it takes more than 22 years, but it is a fact that this event, although up to now cannot be compared by the people to the event of the discovery of America, for us, the followers of Srila Prabhupada and of this Krishna Consciousness Movement, it is a much more important event. So today we wanted to mention a little bit of this event. I speak a little about this event of Srila Prabhupada arriving in America 22 years ago. And to this effect, we will read just very briefly. This book, as you know, some of you may know, that we have three fundamental titles in our Krishna Consciousness Movement, three most important literatures. So the most basic is the Bhagavad Gita, and we just read from there. Then the next stage, Bhagavad Gita introduces us to the next literature, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God, Krishna. And that book introduces us to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that literally means the beautiful, Srimad means beautiful, the beautiful narrations about Krishna and everything related to him, specifically his devotees. So there's the beautiful narrations of Krishna and his devotees, and all related, and all that is Bhagavat, Bhagavatam, all that is related to him. And then that book further introduces us to what Srila Prabhupada called the postgraduate study of Krishna consciousness, which is this book, the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Bhagavad Gita is comprised of 700 verses, Srimad Bhagavatam. So that was put by Srila Prabhupada in one book, 700 verses plus his commentary. That is one of our books. Then the Srimad Bhagavatam is composed of 18,000 verses. And that was presented by Srila Prabhupada. Those 18,000 verses are divided in 12 cantos, and Srila Prabhupada presented 10 of them in about some 30 books. And then, finally, Srila Prabhupada presented to us the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, as I said, called by him the postgraduate study. And this was presented by him in 17 books. So at the end of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada puts some concluding words. And in these concluding words, he's remembering the occasion of his meeting with his spiritual master, which was the seed of his coming to America, which was the moment in which his trip to America began. It was definitely a very long journey up to the point of founding this Krishna consciousness movement. And it is very amazing for us now to see in retrospective how everything happened, how even after Srila Prabhupada arrived, after he already put everything together by the will of Krishna, like we see, we may want to do something, but sometimes something that we very much want to do, and we may want to do immediately even, we see it may encounter so many obstacles and may take us time and time and time, and all of a sudden that thing which we wanted, all of a sudden it becomes very easy and very quickly is achieved. Sometimes it's like that. So something like that, something of that sort happened in the case of this traveling of Srila Prabhupada to America, which began in 1922. He met his spiritual master in 1922, and I'm saying that's when his traveling to America began. And that means 43 years later, he arrived, finally. It was a traveling of 43 years. So Srila Prabhupada, I'll just read an excerpt from these concluding words. In this connection, he says, we may call to memory, can you lower down the volume a little bit, please? In this connection, we may call to memory the time when I was fortunate enough to meet His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada also calls his spiritual master Srila Prabhupada. That is a very honorific title of the highest order given to a very great spiritual master. So that's our Srila Prabhupada also called his spiritual master Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada. In this connection, we may call to memory the time when I was fortunate enough to meet His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, sometime in the year 1922. Srila Prabhupada had come to Calcutta from Sridham Mayapur to start the missionary activities of the Gaudiya Math. He was sitting in a house at Ultadanga when, through the inducement of an intimate friend, the late Sriman Narendranath Malik, I had the opportunity to meet His Divine Grace for the first time. So Prabhupada was taken there by a close friend to meet his spiritual master. I do not remember the actual date of the meeting, but at that time I was one of the managers of Dr. Bose's laboratory in Calcutta. I was a newly married young man, addicted to Gandhi's movement and dressed in khadi. Fortunately, even at our first meeting, His Divine Grace advised me to preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in English in the Western countries. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, is in our Krishna consciousness movement, the latest incarnation of God, the latest avatar of Krishna, appearing 500 years ago in Mayapur, West Bengal. Because at that time I was a complete nationalist, a follower of Mahatma Gandhi's, I submitted to His Divine Grace that unless our country were freed from foreign subjugation, no one would hear the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seriously. Of course, we had some argument on this subject, but at last I was defeated and convinced that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message is the only panacea for suffering humanity. I was also convinced that the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was then in the hands of a very expert devotee, and that surely the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would spread all over the world. I could not, however, immediately take up his instructions to preach, but I took his words very seriously and was always thinking of how to execute his order, although I was quite unfit to do so. In this way, I passed my life as a householder until 1950, when I retired from family life as a vanaprastha, retired life. With no companion, I loitered here and there until 1958, when I took sannyas, the renounced order of life. Then I was completely ready to discharge the order of my spiritual master. Previously, in 1936, just before His Divine Grace passed away at Jagannath Puri, I wrote him a letter asking what I could do to serve him. In reply, he wrote me a letter dated 13 December 1936, that's just about a fortnight before he passed away, ordering me in the same way to preach in English the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as I had heard it from him. After he passed away, I started the fortnightly magazine Back to Godhead sometime in 1944 and tried to spread the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through this magazine. After I took sannyas, or the renounced order of life, a well-wishing friend suggested that I write books instead of magazines. Magazines, he said, might be thrown away, but books remain perpetually. Then I attempted to write Srimad Bhagavatam. Before that, when I was a householder, I had written on Srimad Bhagavad Gita and had completed about 1,100 pages. But somehow or other, the manuscript was stolen. In any case, when I had published Srimad Bhagavatam first canto in 3 volumes in India, I thought of going to the USA. By the mercy of His Divine Grace, I was able to come to New York on September 17, 1965. Since then, I have translated many books, including Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and many others. So, this reading has brought us to that date, which we commemorated a few days ago, 17th of September, 1965. Which will always be a very memorable occasion for us, because it is actually our real independence day from this ahankara, false ego. It is something, you see, as the text of Bhagavad Gita that we began reading today, the great problem, the great disease of materialism, it is one of those diseases that the worst part of it is that we don't know, we can't see how we have it. That is the worst part of a disease. When you can't see that you're diseased, that is the worst part of it. So this ahankara, false ego, has that aspect to it, that streak, that characteristic, that we can see how far we are manipulated by it. And it requires a very potent medicine, a very potent process, and a very expert physician to cure this disease, this false ego. And we were all very fortunate in the Western world, extremely fortunate, that that expert physician appeared in the form of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada, and that he took the proper cause. We all have some cause in life that we are defending. It is unavoidable. Some may have a very noticeable cause, a public cause. Some may be working for the public in different ways. Some may be seeking independence of a country or may have done it. Just like Srila Prabhupada, at one point, he acted as he was expressing in the reading we just had today, a few minutes ago. In this concluding words, Prabhupada was expressing how himself, he was at some point in life acting as a nationalist and defending that cause and following Gandhi. So we were very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada abandoned that cause for a most worthy cause, which was the salvation of humankind, of humanity. And specifically, those all of us who are present here tonight are very fortunate that in somewhere or other, we received the fruit of that endeavor, of that effort of his. So we all have some cause in life, and we should analyze this. Actually, Krishna consciousness is not meant to present some anachronic philosophy, some anachronism, some philosophy, some outdated philosophy. Krishna consciousness is not meant to present some nice stories from the East, some mythology, but Krishna consciousness is meant to be something very practical. And all these books, the amazing thing is of them is that they were presented, they appeared in this world many thousands upon thousands of years ago. The philosophy that's there, actually, you'll be surprised. We also have a Krishna conscious history. And in our history does not begin with men in, how you call them, the cavemen. But those are very modern cavemen. Our philosophy explains that the beginning of the world is with the most wisest people, very wise people. And the proof to that is all this philosophy, Krishna conscious philosophy. These books, as far as books are concerned, if you go to any university, they're approved, they're accepted by all the scholars in all universities as being of the most ancient scriptures. So that is commonly accepted. So once you understand they're the most ancient scriptures and you read them, you will become amazed of what is there. For example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they speak of Vimana. So 5,000 years ago, they were speaking of Vimana. Viman means airplane. So that was there already 5,000 years ago. And there are so many stories being related in the Srimad Bhagavatam in which airplanes are cited, are mentioned. Then also in Srimad Bhagavatam you find, and in all these in Vedic scriptures in general, you find the word Paramanu, and that is the atom. And there is so much said in Srimad Bhagavatam about the atom also, and there's a philosopher, and there's a whole treatise. It's called the Paramanu Vada. There's a whole treatise on this subject matter And there was a philosopher representing all these theories related to the atom or Paramanu from the atomistic point of view. And therefore, many scholars, they say that this idea of the atoms appeared in the Greeks, in the Greek philosophers, precisely because of their connection with Indian philosophy. So Paramanu, there is a treatise, the Paramanuvada of the philosopher Kanada. So that's there also. And you will find in Srimad Bhagavatam also explanations of the baby in the womb. Even that you can find in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, it is modern psychology. Many things that were there for thousands of years in these scriptures are being so-called discovered nowadays by the scientists. And for example, this is one of those points that whoever is related to psychology and similar subject matters may know that now it is said that the most important part of the psyche, you call it, of the individual, the most important part of that formation of the psyche of the individual, am I pronouncing that correctly? Psyche. So the most important part of the psyche of the individual is formed while he is in the womb. Very surprisingly, they're discovering now this. People think that for people it's even difficult to believe, that life is in the, that there is life in the womb even for so many months. And I don't know how they understand that the embryo is evolving. And how the fetus is growing, and what happens that at certain point, without any external thing happening, if they don't believe that life begins when the father implants the seed in the womb of the mother, then what happens later that all of a sudden life begins? What is that reaction? Because the embryo was growing all the time since the very night or day of conception. So what made it grow up to the point in which life supposedly appeared later on? Very strange concepts they have these days. Anyway, so we find in the scriptures so many things that are being now so-called discovered. So therefore we can see that these scriptures were not the product of uncivilized or tribesmen, but we see that it is even very difficult for us to understand precisely everything that is being presented. As a matter of fact, as I like to point out often, that all these scriptures constitute a great secret, and all over the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam this is mentioned. In third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam also, Kapiladev is speaking to his mother, another incarnation of Krishna. He's instructing his mother in spiritual science. And he also tells her that this is a very parama guhyam. And also in Bhagavad Gita this is called Raja guhyam. So this word guhyam, secret, is being presented there. So these scriptures are, and this knowledge is being presented as a very confidential secret. So it is such a secret that no matter how intelligent you are, you have to be given the passcode, the PIN number to get in. So this has come to us by great acharyas. And Srila Prabhupada specifically took mercy on us. What were our chances to come to this philosophy, to accept this philosophy? And actually, he was perfect in every aspect. He was also perfect in describing our situation. And the day he arrived, he wrote this poem. And I'll read it. So there's a note here. before the poem. On September 17, 1965, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada arrived in Boston on board the ship Jaladuta, carrying within his heart the orders of his spiritual master to spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya beyond the borders of India throughout the entire world. As he looked out upon Boston's bleak and dirty skyline, he could understand the difficulty of this sacred mission and felt great compassion for these godless people. Thus, with perfect humility, he composed this historic prayer in Bengali, praying for the deliverance of all falling souls. So our text of Bhagavad Gita of today, in the purport, Prabhupada spoke of the difference between a Krishna conscious person and an ordinary person in materialistic consciousness. And the main difference is how the Krishna conscious person is freed from this false ego, from the false identification, is freed from this being so sure of him or herself. This is a great disease. To feel perfectly secure in this material world is a very strong disease, is a kind of craziness. Just as no one would feel safe and happy and peaceful if he knew that he was very close to death. So in the same way, that is actually what our condition is in this material world. We will have to face something very terrible from our point of view, which is death, and still we can remain peaceful. So there is something wrong there. And what is wrong there is that we don't believe there is anything wrong. We don't understand this point. And this is a false ego. This is the influence of false ego. And Srila Prabhupada was able to perceive exactly where we were at from the very moment he came off board. And he says, "My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul." So Prabhupada doesn't think ahankara vimudatma. He doesn't think kartahamiti. Kartaham means he who is doing the thing. So he doesn't think he's doing it. He feels, so that means he's freed from this false ego. He understands that what can he do? So Srila Prabhupada at every moment is a perfect example. And he is here being such a perfect example of a perfectly Krishna conscious person. "My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place?" Definitely he was in America. "Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva or Krishna. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. But I know your causeless mercy can make everything possible, because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will. And therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation. And if a sober person repeatedly receives it with submissive oral reception, then he will be able to understand your message. He will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. That's us, for their understanding, our understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel engladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance. O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, in honor of Bhakti and in honor of the Vedanta, of the Vedic scriptures. Bhakti means devotion. So in honor of devotion to God and in honor of the scriptures. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta. And now, O Lord, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Dated 18th of September, 1965. That was the next day. So I will stop here. Is there any question? If there are any questions, we can answer very quickly. So thank you very much once again, and we invite you now to stay and take part of our Prasadam feast, which is the transcendental offering, transcendental food that was offered to Lord Krishna and that now very kindly will be distributed to us. Thank you very much for your listening, and we will like to keep your company, continue coming to our temple. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Nandi.